There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 992, May 15th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Aston Martin turning Japanese. I really think so. Miami Nice to Miami Knights. The heat is on in Enstone. And ready in Formula 1, 2, and 3. So says Mikey. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Ricciardo gets a seat fitting at AlphaTauri. Oh boy. Fernando even motivating the other old man of the sea, LCH. Honda looks to be going to Aston or McLaren again and again and again. So we'll see how Machismo responds to the GP2 engine. And this week's interview, Nolan Siegel, NAS, will have the fine details of this young man. And quickly, I do need to remind everyone, and this is very important. I say it every week, but there's a reason. It's called We Must Pay the Man, and we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How you been?
I'm doing pretty good, sir. Thank you. And as you know, over the weekend, I was a frontier man, so my spirit was very high and still high. But now I'm on the ground. On Friday, after a two-hour flight, I took Friday off, by the way, and after a two-hour flight and two-hour drive from Cincinnati, I was back home again in Indiana. Now, I did not see the candlelight through the sycamore like Jim Nabors, but I had a great time. I got to interview both IndyCar drivers from the Juncos team, Agostino Canapino from Argentina, and Mr. Callum Ilott from Cambridge, UK. And, you know, I'm very happy we are building up our arsenal of interviews. I also did a couple of chats with Christian Rasmussen. He is from Denmark and racing in Indy Next Series, actually leading the championship. And with a very international driver who was racing in Formula 3 and Formula 2, and that's how I know him. Now he's racing in USF Pro 2000, which is like two steps below IndyCar racing. His name is Lerim Zendeli. He is from Germany. His parents are from Macedonia of Albanian heritage. So that's very interesting. How was the weekend for Duke of Dijon?
Very exciting. We had a Mother's Day, so there was a lot of festivities. And we had a nice race at Indianapolis that was fun to watch on Saturday. So yes, very exciting. Damn, how was the weather in Indianapolis?
The weather was very good. It was cool and sometimes a little bit cloudy, but it was very nice. And, you know, I'll tell you, man, I've been there many times. I've been to all the F1 races there, including the historic 2005. And my experience there in dealing with the people there, very, very nice. And, you know, F1 Weekly has faced some challenges at certain tracks, but Indy and Daytona, And of course, the folks at St. Petersburg, they have been just super, super nice to us. So I just want to say thank you to all these people who make our lives so comfortable and nice, you know, when we go to their tracks. So it was very nice. And I got to meet our good old friend, Mr. Christopher DeHardy. He's getting married this year. So that's good. I am going in 2 weeks to the Detroit IndyCar race, so hopefully we'll get some more interviews done. And you know, one good thing is this guy from Argentina, Ricardo Juncos, I interviewed him a few years ago. I've met him a few times. And I met his PR lady, who is also from Argentina, and she was very helpful. And she said, you know, if you ever want to come here and sit down and chillax and have a drink, you are welcome. Nobody will say anything. So that was sort of a quasi home for me there, you know. Because, you know, and Indy is a huge facility. You know, you walk from Indy paddock to the U.S. Formula 2000, it's like a 20-minute walk. So that was fun. And you know, again, speaking of the nice people at Indy, the media pass and the parking pass I got is good for the whole month of May. And that's just super nice. And the parking was like 2-minute walk to the track. So they really made our life very, very comfortable. So keep up the good work to them and keep up the good work to the host of F1 Weekly. Who could that be?
El Machismo.
Exactly, on this side of the pond. And sir, we have a fully loaded burrito today, so we have a lot of servings. So let's start with our what we have for Formula One. You know, they say you meet the nicest and fastest people on a Honda. Well, Senna was one, and so is Max. Since Max has a Ford in his future, rumor mill is spinning, what you alluded to, that Honda may go with the green car. I heard that McLaren, amazingly not Honda, but McLaren had approached Honda for some chit-chat, and apparently it did not go anywhere. Now, this partnership between Aston Martin and Honda will not surprise me. As you may recall, Aston Martin name was already on the cards when GP2 engines first arrived at Red Bull, with one very important clause, if this deal is to happen. I can hear Honda executives saying, "Stroll sans. We want drivers who say good things about our engine. Hi, hi." Which means Honda will put Machismo on the Bon Jovi program. You know what they say, you sleep in the bed you make, and if you make yourself a futon, it may not only be a rainy but uncomfy night in Georgia and España. But sir, stranger things have happened in Formula One. Ron Dennis embraced Fernando Alonso, as we saw some years ago. How do you look at this Honda situation? Where do you think they will end up?
It's sort of bizarre because I'm sort of surprised that Red Bull is going to take that gamble and go with Ford, even though it's a done deal. It's quite shocking because you have a lot of success with Honda. And now, I guess after the Renault experience, they want to ditch the engines before they become uncompetitive, which is a good strategy if you can see the future. But on the other hand, well, Honda does have to, and there's some rumors that Honda might come back as a manufacturer. So we'll see what happens. But I can see them going to Aston with the development of Aston Martin up in the top five all the time now. With the Honda package and the Honda DRS, it could be quite exciting.
You know what would be very good? Michael Andretti, if he teams up with Honda, because his team here is powered by Honda anyway. This is a huge market for Honda. And I mean, that will be a lethal combination, Andretti-Honda. And I hope, you know, he has tried with Renault. He's still tied with Renault for engines. Now he's going Caddyshack, and Caddy saying that we may have our own engine program. It can be very simplified. If Honda and Andretti put resources, I'm sure they can buy AlphaTauri from Red Bull or Williams from somebody. But times are exciting. Times are exciting. Okay, sir, moving on from our favorite pinata, we go to Knights in White Satin and Miami Gardens. When more people are coming to Formula One than IndyCar races here in the United States, you know Formula One has arrived in America after a long and successful chase. And I say, thank you, Mr. Carey and Miss Netflix. Miami Grand Prix was a sellout in 2022 and even bigger in 2023. Now there's talk on the street that Miami Grand Prix may go under bright lights on a Florida night. As old school and old geezer by now, I am not a big fan of gimmicks, but times they are changing. Facing reality, I have to embrace and endure a giant sucking sound that a Saturday night Miami Grand Prix will be totally radical, man. What say you, California Frenchman?
Yeah, I can dig that. It's cooler at night. It's hot in Miami. The night scene in Miami is intense. And machismo, the rumba. I'm telling you, it's going to be exciting. And I'm not talking about the vacuum cleaner, Nasser. So yeah, Miami is hot. And of course, now there's talk of New York coming back. I'm not happy with the location, but yep, New York could be back on the track.
Well, New York was another great city in the US of A. And I think a race in New York, Miami, and California is, I think, minimum daily requirement by the FDA division of FIA. I would love to see a race in a big city, in Big Apple. It's going to be a street race, of course. I heard that they're going to be using the same part that they were going to... Remember we did the interview with the gentleman who was going to be in charge of the New York Grand Prix and then the deal fell apart?
Exactly. I remember even Sebastian Vettel going to New York, driving the circuit. It was very, very, very exciting.
And the Manhattan skyline, it's incredible. Okay, sir, now we go to catch scratch fever over the greatest spectacle in racing. And this involves your favorite. Catfight is brewing between the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Liberty Media. Thanks to LL Cool J, IMS is not happy he called Formula One the greatest spectacle in racing. Now, this is the sign that greets you when you enter the speedway that has been holding 500-mile races since 1911. IMS, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, sent a Dear John Malone letter to Liberty Media when the catchy slogan was used to promote the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Doug Bowles, president of IMS, said they will again contact Liberty Media. He said, and I quote, "It was really more specifically related to Vegas, where we had the problem. This is the first time we've heard it related to Miami, so we will definitely be calling our friends there again. I'm excited that F1's here, but go build your own IP, go build your own 114 years of existence, and not steal ours." End quote. Let's hope cooler heads will prevail and LL Cool J will not lead to Jacoby and Myers in the pit lane. You think this will be resolved amicably?
Yes, I'm sure it will be. I mean, Penske would love to have Formula One back at IMS. The problem, there's just too many other exciting venues, but I would love to see Formula One back at IMS. That's why I watch the IndyCar in the street course at IMS, because it reminded me of the old days. You know, they go clockwise, it's exciting. It's a good road course.
Yeah, I would love to have the race back. I would prefer Indy over Vegas anytime. So much history there. Okay, sir. So we're basically looking at 5 Formula One races in the U.S. Pretty soon.
And we deserve it.
That exactly. 10-4 on that. The heat is on. The Otmar Szafnauer saga. The man from Detroit who was born in Romania left Aston Martin because there was only one Pope there. And these are his own words. His prayers were answered swiftly and he became lay principal at Alpine. His boss is Laurent Rossi, who is considered the only Pope at Alpine, as per Monsieur Alain Prost, lay professor. Laurent recently lashed out at his team, accusing them of not producing results reflecting the resources available. And I don't think that team has the resources of a Red Bull or a Mercedes. Otmar said he will have a word with Laurent. Let's see what happens. Turbulence in a team is never a good thing. I also read that Alpine has worked out an arrangement to sell their cars in the U.S. through AutoNation dealerships, which is a sponsor of Michael Andretti's IndyCar team, and we all know what engine will power Mikey's F1 team. A Cadillac powered by Renault. Sounds as wonderful as Mercedes' parent company buying Chrysler. SLK meets K-Car. Mr. Rogers, have you put down your down payment to buy the first Alpine, blue-color Alpine sold in the U.S.? And I hate to say this, given the history of French cars in the U.S. market, It will be an instant classic the moment you take delivery. What say you?
Great car. Unfortunately, our supporters, our contributors, our donators only donate enough to pay for the cloud. There's never any remnants. There's no extra bank accounts. We are not the Mormon Church by any stretch of the imagination. But I wish I could buy the Alpine because it's one of my favorite cars. Always has been one of my favorite cars. And these days, all cars are fairly reliable if given the proper service. And that's where the French failed in the United States in the past. No service. You can't have a Chevy guy working on a Renault because they both speak different languages. So it's fascinating, but I'll be surprised. But yeah, great car, but I just don't have $70,000 to spare right now, Nasser.
Understand. Okay, moving on to Andretti in Formula One. Sometime this year, probably July, we will find out who the new teams are. There is interest from teams and smooth, rich operators based in Asia, Arabia, America, and of course, Europa. Michael Andretti wants to arrive in style with Cadillac. If excess is allowed, he wants to establish a racing ladder by expanding his UK-based F1 operation to include Formula 2 and Formula 3, much like he has successfully done on this side of the pond. Mario Andretti was quoted on a racing website saying F1 better give them a franchise. This has become personal now, I think. Andretti on this side of the pond versus the man on the other side of the pond, Stefano Domenicali. And you know, I really thought with Mario Andretti being a sort of a paisan to Stefano Domenicali, things would not go out of hand the way they have. How do you look at this situation, sir?
Well, first of all, I really like the Cadillac angle, and I really hope they do build their own engines. They have a car. They have to paint it purple. It'll be low already, but with some dingle balls and a brim hat, the Cadillac is going to be bad to the bone, and you know who's going to want to drive for Cadillac.
Danica Patrick? Oh, Aretha Franklin, if she's still around.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. T-C-T. Suck it to me, suck it to me, suck it to me, suck it to me.
Don't know what it means to me. Suck it to me. Yes, very good idea, Mr. Rogers. Will the car have spinners?
Of course, of course. And they have to be from Compton.
Exactly. And polished by Puff Daddy.
Oh, it'll be great to see their whole crew will be dressed like Puff Daddy, LL Cool J. You know, it'll be the funkiest thing you ever saw in your life.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, also Craig Pollock, who was Jacques Villeneuve's manager and, you know, the man behind the $500 million sponsorship for BAR, he is also fronting a project which is based out of Saudi Arabia, and the name is Formula Equal. It will have 50% guys and 50% ladies. It's amazing what people will do for money. I'm just like, amazed. But, you know, to each his own, and we'll see how it works out. But I just hope that the granting of franchises this year or this time is much better than they had last time. They would not give a franchise to David Richards, who is now president of BRDC, British Racing Drivers Club, has been involved in motorsports all his life, had this pro drive, still does, very successful in different forms of motorsports, but they gave it to man running a wind tunnel and car designed by his son, and of course promoted by Peter Windsor, who I remember in a few days became more American than Patrick Henry. Remember when they went to that their team off headquarters in North Carolina? It was a huge facility. There was nothing there, and in a room, Peter Windsor is sitting there wearing an American flag, and guess what he has on? That was the biggest joke for me. What picture he has on the wall? Not Dan Gurney or America's first world champion Phil Hill or Carroll Shelby or, you know, Briggs Cunningham. No, Jim Clark. Like he was a farmer from Iowa. You remember those days?
Oh, that was some of my favorite stuff. I was waiting for Dario Franchitti to come up.
Yeah, and then Speed Vision, whatever they were calling, Speed TV had become like the mouthpiece of the team. Unbelievable. Okay, sir, we have to move on. YouTube as a yardstick. Oh, this was of much interest to me. And this was posted on a racing website, and I hope the numbers provided by the gentleman are correct or in the ballpark. And he wrote, there are 346,000 YouTube IndyCar subscribers. Formula E has 791,000 subscribers. Now, Formula E is very global and has a lot of drivers from different countries, so one can understand. And it goes all over the world. Numbers for Le NASCAR is 1.03 million. Now we're talking serious business. But this is what blew me away. MotoGP has 5.5 million subscribers. I mean, MotoGP is very popular, especially in certain markets. Have you seen half of the field is like Spanish riders?
Exactly. And it's very, yeah, and it's big in France, Spain, everywhere. MotoGP is huge.
Yeah, very popular in Argentina, South America also. Okay, now, like David Byrne of Talking Heads, you may ask yourself, where is my beautiful Formula One? And the answer is blowing in the wind. 8.9 million subscribers for Formula One. Baby, how does that grab you?
I'm so happy and fuzzy inside.
Yes, I am also very, very happy. And man, the credit really goes to Sean Bratches, the guy who came to Liberty Media from ESPN, and his brainchild, the voodoo child called Netflix. Tremendous job. Now we come to another of our favorites, Quickie in Collie. How teammates are doing against each other. With five races so far, George Russell has out-qualified LCH four times. And this performance by George Russell is very, very impressive. Nico Hülkenberg has also out-qualified Kevin Magnussen 4-1. Not much of a surprise, but very impressive considering time out of F1 for the German driver. Yuki Tsunoda and Lando Norris also share the same record over their teammates, 4-1. Beginning of the season, I really thought Nick will freeze Yuki, but now Nick is in danger of becoming Dr. Marco's latest sacrificial lamb. That will be bad for his career. Looks like Honey Badger is already sharpening the Ginzu knife for F1's top-rated executioner, the Gordon Ramsay of racing, Dr. Marco. Max and Leclerc are 3-2 over their respective number twos. Only two drivers have not been out-qualified so far this season. One is Alexander Albon versus Logan Sargeant. The other, drumroll please. Yes, the old man down the Avenida Oviedo, known as Machismo. He has the upper hand and strolling all over his teammate Lance with a lot of good advice, which is getting a lot of press, by the way. Alonso has driven a Mile 7 blue car, a red-hot car, and with Aston Martin, he seems to be a jolly green giant. And speaking of jolly green giant, the report is rain is almost a guarantee at Imola on Sunday. So this is an opening for El Machismo to make some hay while it's pouring down. And he can do magic anyway.
For sure. This means that, well, Max Verstappen, Sergio's got to get pissed off. There's got to be some incident in the cafeteria because Perez will see Max trying to grab an enchilada. And he's going to run over there. There'll be a fight over the enchilada. And this is going to be bad sour grapes all weekend. And Fernando is going to take the lead as they crash. It's going to be very, very good. Very good. Very good.
Okay, sir. Shall we take a break now?
That's a good idea. I got a little hungry. So let's put a couple of frozen burritos in the microwave. And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Marcus Ericsson. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And let's start with a conversation with a young chap. And this is today's interview is with Nolan Siegel. And this was recorded at the Barber Motorsports Park a few weeks ago. And Mr. Rogers, you know, in the United States, there have been some very talented young drivers who have come through the system since 1985 when I arrived here. And top of the heap, I still think, we're talking road racing talent, I would say Robbie Gordon, incredible racing talent. And I think another kid who was very, very good was AJ Allmendinger, okay? And I think this 17, 18-year-old Nolan Siegel, he's actually from Palo Alto, California, which is just down the road from where you are, but he now lives in Portola Valley, which is halfway to Santa Cruz and the Santa Cruz Mountains. This kid is very, very talented, and to me, he looks like a future poster child for Roger Penske Racing because he has anything and everything Roger Penske wants in a racing driver. First talent, mega talent that he has, and not a chip on his shoulder like Montoya and myself. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. So I think the future is bright for this kid, and I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation with Nolan Siegel, who is currently racing in Indy Next Series.
Okay, folks, I'm here with a young man from F1 Weekly's neck of the woods, Northern California, Mr. Nolan Siegel. Nolan, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. A very impressive start to the 2023 Indy Next season. What will it take for a talented young rookie like you to win the championship in his first season?
I think it's just consistent results like we've been having, just being at the top in every session and you know, finishing every race is going to be super important this year.
So the focus is on collecting a lot of points, not just win every race.
Absolutely.
Okay, you are starting from front row here in Alabama. Your team does well here. What is the secret of success at this beautiful track?
The team's done a fantastic job. They've put in tons and tons of work in the off season and in this break since St. Pete to get the cars into tip-top shape. So, yeah, they've been doing a great job and looking to keep it up for the rest of the season.
Driver has done a great job, too.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, did you set any goals in terms of number of wins or position in the standings before the season started?
We're looking for a championship this year. The goal is always first in the standings, and you know, number of wins, we never really set a goal. It's just as many as we can get, and we take it race by race, and if we're in a position to win, then we'll go for it, but if we're not, then we've just got to get consistent results.
There are drivers in second year in the championship, and among rookies, just my personal opinion, you and Louis Foster are top contenders. Who do you think will give you the biggest challenge for the title?
Yeah, right now it's looking like there are a lot of really strong competitors. It's been a super, super competitive season so far, and I think that it'll continue to be that way. So I think, yeah, myself and Louis seem to be up there with the second-year guys, and then within my team, we've got a lot of really strong returning drivers like Rasmussen and Frost that'll be hard to beat. So we'll be on the top of our game.
Honestly, are you surprised that you are up to the pace of second and third year drivers?
That was the goal going into it, and you know, we did a lot of preparation for it, and I'm happy to be here, but I wouldn't say that I'm surprised. I think that was kind of the expectation and the goal.
Okay, cool. Like most young drivers, you started in karting. Please give us a little background to your karting adventures.
Yeah, I started in go-karts at Sonoma Raceway. So, you know, did a few years there, went to the kind of national and regional level of karting before going into USF 2000. So I didn't do as much karting as some of these other guys, but it was definitely an amazing place to start.
And is the interest in racing coming from mom and dad, or is this your own agenda?
No, my parents, nobody in my family knew anything about racing until I started go-karting, so it's been an adventure for all of us.
How did the bug get to you?
My dad actually put me in a go-karting camp just for fun one year at Sonoma, and I loved it from the minute I tried it.
Great. Now, you've done some karting in Europe also. Tell us where it was and what was the difference from the karting seen there to karting seen here in the U.S.?
Yeah, I did do one race. It was a Central European Rotax final in Austria. I went because good family friends of ours, former F1 driver Alex Wirtz and his family, invited us out to stay with him in Austria and do the race with his kids. So we had a great time out there, and it was super competitive. It was a great learning experience for me. Everyone there is very, very aggressive, especially in go-karts. So it was a big learning experience for me.
And now, do you know if you know Alex Wirtz, you probably know this. You know the story of what happened to him when he was young and he went to race in New Zealand and went to a local McDonald's?
No, I don't think so.
He didn't have the money to pay, so the manager got very upset. Next time you see him, ask him.
Yeah, I will do.
Mickey D's for him. Okay, when you moved into single-seaters, you know, I talked to a lot of young drivers. Most of them say it was same thing moving into single-seaters. Some have said it took some time. How was it for you?
I started quite early and didn't have the same karting experience as everyone else, but I think I took to it quite quickly, and it wasn't, you know, that big an adjustment for me. I really enjoyed it from the start, and have obviously progressed a lot since then, but loved it from the beginning.
Okay. You raced in U.S. Formula 2000 for 3 seasons. Tell us about your high points and if there were any low points, and why 3 years in one series?
I wanted to get to a point where I was, you know, competitive at every weekend and, you know, winning races, and it took me 3 years to get there. I started when I was 14, so I was the youngest one in the series, and just relatively inexperienced, but I learned so much in my 3 years there, and the high points were definitely the wins that came at the end of my 3 years.
Yes, I think it was a great decision, and we see the results now. Last year, you did a tremendous job in your rookie season in Indy Pro 2000 series. How do you look back on that season?
It was a great season with D-Force Racing. It was my second season with them. Obviously, did USF 2000 with them the year before. Yeah, it was a fantastic rookie season for me. I started the year with a win here, win in St. Pete, so we were strong all year, and the team did a great job. I feel like it was a great environment for me to grow and progress as a driver.
Your goal is to race on the Monaco Grand Prix circuit. Any plans to race on the other side of the pond?
I would love to get into some European racing, but right now the plan is to stay here on the IndyCar side, and the goal is IndyCar for sure. So, you know, that goal and dream has maybe faded a little bit.
Now, next question really got me interested in talking to you. You were 18 years old when I read this. You were 17. But like most drivers today, their heroes are like Senna, Schumacher, or even Hamilton. You're going back in time for your racing hero. Tell me what you know about Jim Clark and what got you interested in his achievements.
Yeah, Jim Clark is, I think, a really inspirational figure for me because of what he accomplished. And it wasn't, you know, he wasn't someone that had all of the resources, and, you know, he wasn't someone that was always kind of pushed and destined for success in racing. So I think he was a super hard worker and got to where he was on merit, and it's inspirational for me, and I would like to get to be a name like his someday.
And who is guiding and managing your career, and have you ever employed a driver coach?
Yeah, I've had lots of coaches throughout the years, some formal and some informal. In IMSA, actually, there are some great, great people that have helped me along the way. Jeff Westfall and Tyler McQuarrie and Tom Dyer as well are all amazing GT drivers that have helped me in my GT career, and have come over and helped me in single-seaters as well. So those guys, and then currently I have Charles Cruz helping me, who is fantastic and has been a major, major help in my career.
Okay. You eat a cupcake before every race. What is the background to this sweet tradition?
So I don't do that anymore, only if I really need some extra luck. But when I first started in cars at Sonoma Raceway, I ate a cupcake one day on race day and won the race and qualified on pole, so it kind of became a little tradition, and I'd have a little bite of cupcake just for good luck.
Okay. Now, your guilty food pleasure is Häagen-Dazs. Question is, what will you do for a Klondike bar?
What will I do? Sorry?
What will you do for a Klondike bar?
Oh, I don't know. Lots of things. Lots of things. It sounds great right now in the Alabama sun.
Great. Okay, finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. Tell them about your social media, your website.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm everywhere. So, yeah, I've been trying to build a presence on there and get a bigger following. So, yeah, you can also visit my website to see stats or you know, current progress and follow.
What's your website?
Oh, it's NolanSiegel.com.
Okay, I really appreciate your time. All the best to you.
Nolan, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nasser.
Yes, sir, and we shall continue with Motorsports Mondial now. IndyCar race from the road course at IMS. Race took place on Saturday, which you mentioned earlier, and was won by a Spanish driver, Alex Palou. And you know, this really worked out for me. Oh, here's the big surprise. First time in my life, I departed from Tampa on time and departed back from Cincinnati on time, and each time it was Frontier Airlines. So keep up the good work to Frontier Airlines. That's the first, by the way. So anyway, race was very good. The weather was very good, and it's such a fantastic facility. Okay, the Indy Next, they were also racing. This is, of course, the new name for Indy Lights. This is American version of Formula 2. The race winner had a familiar name, Nannini, as in Matteo Nannini. He is the nephew of one-hit wonder Alessandro Nannini. And as luck would have it, in the previous two races in St. Petersburg and Alabama, he was 15, so nobody expected him to win. And he did, from pole position, with authority. And he is with Hunkos Racing, and I had arranged an interview with him. But, you know, when you win, it, you know, 3 o'clock becomes 3:15, 3:15 becomes 3:45. So we had a couple of delays, and then I told the lady, you know, I'm coming to Detroit, just keep it simple, because I don't want to interview some guy who has been at the track all day and he's all, you know, burnt out and just giving answers for the sake of answers. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Okay, now we come to MotoGP, very important. While we wait to celebrate 1,000 edition of F1 Weekly podcast in July, MotoGP reached that milestone on Sunday. The first world championship race on two wheels took place on June 13, 1949 on the Isle of Man. Very interesting. And Formula One celebrated their 1,000th race at the 2019 Chinese Grand Prix in Shanghai. Fortune cookie for this race has crumbled thanks to COVID-19 for the last few years. Going back to Le Mans, where the MotoGP race took place, over 110,000 people showed up for the main MotoGP race. Paco Bagnaia started from pole position on his Ducati. This historic event turned out to be very chaotic, with several riders crashing, including pole sitter Paco, and, hate to say this, as usual, Marc Marquez on his own with only two laps remaining. After Roseanne Barr had sung La Marseillaise, Valentino Rossi's team won the race with Paisan Marco Bezzecchi. Bezzecchi is now only 1 point behind Paco in the championship. Now, over the years, MotoGP has seen some very heavy-duty and very successful American riders. Unfortunately, this season there are no riders from the USFA. Now to IMSA, California, Laguna Seca. Penske Porsche on pole. Victory to Cadillac driven by Sebastian Bourdais and Renger van der Zande. Porsche of Nick Tandy and Matthew Jaminet was second. Did you go to this race, senor?
No, sir. I had some medical issues and had to stay home.
Okay. Now we come to our new segment called Calendar Mondial.
January, you start the year off fine. February, you're my little Valentine. March, I'm gonna march you down the aisle. April, you're the Easter bunny when you smile.
Today we feature motorsports in the month of May. May 13, 1950, Silverstone. Birth of Formula One World Championship, first ever race won by Alfa Romeo. Nino Farina was the driver, but another Italian team was missing from action in this race. Scuderia Ferrari. Very interesting. Enzo apparently was not happy with the prize money they were going to give. May 26, 1955, Alberto Ascari, Formula One's first double world champion, was killed at Monza while testing the Ferrari of his friend and fellow paisan, Eugenio Castellotti. The part of circuit he crashed, I am told he crashed because some worker was crossing the track and he tried to avoid. And that part is now named after him, Curva Ascari. Mr. Rogers, some years ago, I think it was 2006, I watched, when cars sounded like racing cars, I watched the GP2 race at Curva Ascari. And it is completely, completely intense and insane. Very, very impressive. May 22, 1966, first Formula One race for McLaren team, car driven by man himself, Bruce McLaren. May 8, 1982, tragedy at Zolder in Belgium, Gilles Villeneuve crashed his Ferrari, suffering fatal injury. May 23, 1993, Ayrton Senna wins his fifth consecutive Monaco Grand Prix and goes one up with a total of six wins on the original Mr. Monaco, Graham Hill. Graham Hill's son, Damon, was second in this race. May 1, 1994, Imola San Marino Grand Prix. Need I say more? May 28, 2017. Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Sato-san becomes not only the first Japanese but also the first Asian driver to win the Indy 500. May 30, 2021. Brazilian Hélio Castro Neves becomes the fourth driver to win the Indy 500 four times. Others being AJ Foyt from Houston, Texas, Alan Sr. from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Rick Mears, originally from Bakersfield, California, but now he hangs out here in Florida, I believe Jupiter, if I'm not mistaken. So the drive for five for Hélio Castro Neves continues. He's on it.
I used to fly into Indianapolis. I remember the F1 Weekly sign at the hotel at the Holiday Inn Express, but we had such good memories at that Holiday Inn.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Remember once we even recorded a podcast from there?
Exactly. Exactly. We were hip and happening.
Yes. And you met Mr. Sebastian Vettel on his Grand Prix debut. And, oh, I'm glad you mentioned the first time they had the race, I was able to get, you know how hard it is to get to autographs of racing drivers in Formula One? But I was able to get an autograph of a person by the name of Pedro de la Rosa, who was driving for Arrows. That's where he learned how to shoot slings and arrows digitally.
Exciting.
Now, let me ask you a question, your favorite question of all time. We have the San Marino Grand Prix. Oh, excuse me, Moa. Maiden Italy and Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, sponsored, I guess, by Pirelli. You think the winning will be six in a row, or Machismo might spoil the party?
We'll see what happens. Machismo is definitely on the hunt. So is Ferrari. It's sort of a home race. So, and Leclerc needs to make amends. You know, he's got to make up for these mistakes. So Leclerc is going to be on the hunt. And if there's rain, like I said, Fernando and Mac could be out of control. But then you never know. We could have a Russell-LCH fight. It's all over the place this season. So it's going to be exciting. And it's a great track.
Yes, and I think if the whole race is rain, wet weather, or intermediate, then I think we're going to see a super, super domination by Max. There's no question in my mind. Especially if it's all wet throughout the race, this guy is going to check out big time. But if it's like the Jenson Button specialty, dry, then he may be caught out when the rain comes down, and then it will open up the doors for other people too. But the big news is Mercedes is coming up with big upgrades. So I don't know how effective that will be. I just hope for the sake of competition that they can at least take the fight to Aston Martin. How things have come up, they're trying to take the fight to Aston Martin before they can even see the rear wing of Checo's car. Amazing.
Well, the interesting part is, yes, they're talking a brand new car. I mean, they're talking a lot of upgrades. But you know what they say, Nasser. No matter how much lipstick you put on that pig, well, you know what they say.
It will still squeal like a pig.
Something like that in the Deep South.
Yes. Well, the race is not in the Deep South of Italy, otherwise it will be in Palermo. But how do you think the Scuderia will do? They're only 90 miles away from that track. I mean, how sad is that?
I think it's exciting. I'm happy for them. Leclerc will drive his personal Ferrari to the track. probably stop somewhere for an espresso, cappuccino, and maybe, oh, I don't know. Who knows?
You know what's going to happen if he stopped his personal Ferrari for cappuccino? First his watch was stolen, now his Ferrari will be stolen.
Or his Ferrari watch will be stolen.
Yes. I mean, I can't imagine somebody would walk on the street wearing a $300,000 watch.
Everybody wants to be cool, you know? If that happens, then we'd have to invite Ron Dennis over just for old times.
Yes, yes. Ron Dennis, you know. I don't know how to reach Ron Dennis if people at... I don't think people at McLaren will cooperate and try to reach him. Someday we can make an attempt to get in touch with him. But now remember, on the day of the Indy 500, the Monaco Grand Prix is same weekend, right?
It usually is. Yes, indeed, sir.
Yeah. But, sir, don't miss out the most important race that weekend, the World 600. It might be known as Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte.
It's the worst race ever invented.
Why?
It's just too long.
Yes, it is too long.
In an oval?
Oh, that's the best part.
If it was just 300 miles, nobody would know the difference except that they would get home earlier and they wouldn't be so burnt out.
Yes.
So that's my tip of the way. Shorten the Coca-Cola 600. And Nasser, we know what's going to happen. Fernando. Oh, and what about LCH saying he's ready to do an IndyCar test? He wants to do NASCAR.
Oh, you know, speaking of LCH, I did not want to get into this, but you brought up, so I'll mention this. Did you see what Ralf Schumacher said about his dress code?
So what's going on with Ralf Schumacher? I mean, he's always rambling away about these bizarre concepts. I guess he got roughed up at Miami, so he's really pissed off. And I could see him with the bouncers in Miami. You know who I am? You know who I am? You're talking to me, man? It must have been super entertaining.
Well, I know, if he had said, I'm the brother of Michael Schumacher, they would have said, who's that? I mean, those people did not even recognize Jackie Stewart.
Listen, it's best that way. No preferential treatment.
Yeah, exactly. Gives people like you and I hope some hope, huh?
We do have hope. And speaking of hope, I think it's time for Musical Mondial so I can get in my caddy and head down the highway.
Yes, sir. And today we have a doozy. We have a very nice instrumental piece called Candy's Theme from the orchestra of Mr. Hugo Montenegro. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy.